Some learned men declare that all kinds of fruitive activity should be given up as faulty. Yet other sages maintain that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should never be abandoned.
O best of the Bharatas, now hear my judgment about renunciation. O tiger among men, renunciation is declared in the scriptures to be of three kinds. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty. O son of Prita, that is my final opinion. Prescribed duties should never be renounced. If one gives up his prescribed duties, then, because of illusion, such renunciation is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Anyone who gives up prescribed duties as troublesome or out of fear of bodily discomfort is said to have renounced in the mode of passion. Such action never leads to the elevation of renunciation. O Arjuna, when one performs his prescribed duty only because it ought to be done, and renounces all material association and all attachment to the fruit, his renunciation is said to be in the mode of goodness. The intelligent renouncer situated in the mode of goodness, neither hateful of inauspicious work nor attached to auspicious work, has no doubts about work. It is indeed impossible for an embodied being to give up all activities, but he who renounces the fruits of action is called one who has truly renounced. For one who has not renounced the threefold fruits of action, desirable, undesirable, and mixed, accrue after death. But those who are in the renounced order of life have no such result to suffer or enjoy. O mighty armed Arjuna, according to the Vedanta, there are five causes for the accomplishment of all action. Now learn of these from me. The place of action, the body, the performer, the various senses, the many different kinds of endeavor, and ultimately the supersoul. These are the five factors of action. Whatever right or wrong action a man performs by body, mind, or speech is caused by these five factors. Therefore, one who thinks himself the only doer, not considering the five factors, is certainly not very intelligent and cannot see things as they are. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills men in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. Knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower are the three factors that motivate action. The senses, the work, and the doer are the three constituents of action. So verses 1 to 12, summary of karma. In his purport to verse 1, Srila Prabhupada confirms that chapter 18 is a summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita. Quote, as in the second chapter, a synopsis of the whole subject matter was described. In the 18th chapter also, the summary of all instructions is given. The purpose of life is indicated to be renunciation and attachment to the transcendental position above the three material modes of nature. The summary opens with a review of the main topic of the first six chapters of Gita. Dutiful, detached work brings no reaction. In verse 1, Arjuna asks a familiar question. Should one combine work with knowledge, or should one renounce activities to perform jnana yoga? In other words, quote, Arjuna wants to clarify the two distinct subject matters of Bhagavad Gita, namely renunciation, tyag, and the renounced order of life, sannyas. Thus he is taking the meaning of these two words, Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 1. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan describes Arjuna's question as follows. The doubting Arjuna asks about the meaning of the word sannyasi, mentioned in statements such as sarvakaramani manasa sannyasyaste sukham vasi, Bhagavad Gita 5.13, and the meaning of tyag mentioned in statements such as tyaktva karma phalashangam, Bhagavad Gita 4.20. Do the two words have completely different meanings, such as trees and stones, or do they have similar meanings, like kurus and pandavas? The words are completely different, then I want to know the different natures of sannyasi and tyaga. If they are two alternate words describing the same thing, I want to know that. Almighty Arm Krishna, Harishikesh, because you stimulate the function of the intelligence, you alone have produced my doubt. You are also the killer of Keshi, and therefore you can kill my doubt. So now we're getting to very essential points. Conclusion here is how this knowledge that's been given through the whole Gita, how it's going to be applied. Right? And as we mentioned, is that how you tell the quality of a work is by the quality of by the purpose of the result. Right? So you'll say an activity is fruitive because of the desire for the result for oneself, or self-centered because of the result for oneself. The activity is not inherently anything, right? You know, the verb is a neutral, a generic, state of existence. Someone drives a car, so they're in the state of driving. Now, what is their mentality? Why they're in that state? That's what defines good and bad. Right? So if one simply looks at the result, you've actually corrected everything else. But at the same time, to be able to have that particular perspective on result, then you also have to bring everything else into line. But if you're going to start somewhere, then once we've started with we're not the body, we're the soul, that's how then the Gita starts. Then it's a matter of then renounce work. Right? Because work is generic. How you identify yourself, what you see the goal is for, that's where the change happens. But the work itself doesn't change. Right? You're cooking for yourself, you're cooking for Krishna, the technique of cooking doesn't change. Driving doesn't change. You know what I'm saying? Nothing changes. If it works, how will it change? If you change it, it won't work. Right? We're devotees, non-devotees, they open the door to the car, get in, sit down, put the key in, turn it when the engine starts, put it in gear, and drive down the road, right? But devotees, now that we're devotees, we don't do any of that. That's Maya, right? You know, we sit on top of the car, you know, and go, come on, giddy up, hey. You know, like this, that's right, isn't it? Like that. Because like the kids, so they're pure, right? And so actually their conscience is more close to the Krishna conscious level. And so that's, therefore, those kids, they get around and sit there and wave their hand in the air and they think they're going somewhere. So in the same way that devotees do, this is very complex. No? No. Okay. So it's exactly the same technique. This is important to note because this is what Krishna is saying later, is that if this is understood, then you're not attached to auspicious and inauspicious work, because work is work. It becomes auspicious because it's connected to the Lord. It becomes inauspicious because it's not. That's one of the qualities of Narad Muni. There's no topic he can't discuss. Right? But we'll have an idea. No, we don't discuss this, or we don't discuss that. No, it's only Maya because it's not connected to the Lord. And if something's connected to the Lord, it's not Maya. So what's the problem? Anything connected to the Lord is special. Make sense? So there's some very important elements here. If these are understood, then it's... So this is not just a matter, okay, something else to memorize. This is where you're supposed to have some deep understanding. From this you get realization. Like that. So this difference between sannyas and tyag is very important. They're the same. They're working in the same field, but there is a difference. The Lord does not give his own opinion on the matter immediately. First, he cites the opinion of the great sages. According to them, the renounced order of life means giving up activities which are based on material desires. And renunciation means giving up the results of all activities. Right? So one is, you're doing the activity, but you may have your own idea that it's mine. Right? The activity will be performed, the result will be gained. Then, having gained that result, that is given away. That is renounced. So that's renunciation. In other words, there's the concept that it's out, means renunciate. You can't call renouncing something that's not yours. Right? So if you have the concept that's yours, gaining it, you can renounce it. Right? But sannyas means you never thought it was yours. So when it says giving up fruit of work, this is where the key is. It doesn't mean activities that generate results, as the common person would define. It means giving up the desire that the results are yours. Right? This is the difference. Therefore, you have devotee may be making money, but if it's for Krishna, it's not fruitive. If it's for himself, that's fruitive. But then he gives that fruit and result to Krishna, that's renunciation. So both are devotional service, just as two different levels. Because this makes the difference between the common definition that's given in the first six chapters, that whatever it is, your interest, your desire, your needs, you connect that to Krishna. So it's karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana yoga. You take your need, connect it to Krishna. But then the next chapters, then they describe that sannyas, not renunciation, where you're doing this for Krishna. You want to serve Krishna, and so it's pure devotional service. You serve Krishna through performing of your prescribed duties. Right? So the prescribed duties don't change. It's important, because otherwise we can fall into the trap of thinking that anything that produces anything nice without opulence or engaging the senses, then that is maya, because it's fruitive. No, that is the place where fruitive people look for a result. That's where they engage themselves. But that's not necessary. That's not what defines it as fruitive. What defines it as fruitive is they want the result for themselves. Right? Means we decorate the altar very nicely. It looks nice, it smells nice, but it's not fruitive. So you can look at the altar and go, wow, that's beautiful. And you're appreciating the transcendental situation. Does that make sense? So we all the time do this when it comes to direct devotional activities. We generally have no philosophical difficulties. Right? No one's going to say deity worships maya, right? Or book distribution's maya, or chanting, you know, associating with devotees. Generally, we'll never call these. We don't have a problem in seeing the element of. We take it naturally. It's sannyas. That's how we've been trained. That's the proper training, and we've gained that. The difficulty comes in the indirect activities, right? The activities dealing within the varnashram. That's where then the problem comes. So then these ones are totally maya, and these ones are okay. Right? But it's a matter of what's the purpose. That's actually the point. Right? So just the general definition is you perform the same activity, you consider result yours, you give it away, that's renunciation. You perform the same activity, you never thought it was going to be yours, it's already been given away before you do the work. And so that's sannyas. Right. So as we see, is they're both favorable to devotional service, but the sex sannyas is more favorable to pure devotional service. Like that. Thus the sages agree that sannyas and tyag are different. They disagree, however, whether one should perform his prescribed duties or not. Right? So this comes down is that because that's there, so the activities that would be used as fruitive, means could be, then they would recommend not doing them so that you stay out of. In other words, they're saying the sannyas is better, right? But they also have the option that renunciation, they focus on sannyas means not doing fruitive work, so they see any work that generates a result as fruitive. This is the weakness in their presentation. Their general definition is exactly correct. Krishna uses that. But the finer point is that, therefore, sannyas means I don't do any activity. But that's not actually what it means. That's where Krishna will give his opinion. There are two opinions among them. All fruit of activities are faulty and should be given up. Two, acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance should not be given up. Right? It's because sacrifice, charity, and penance, this is where fruit of results are generated, at least good quality ones, something that lasts. Right? So some sages will say these should be given up because they're fruitive. And others say they should never be given up. Right? So it should be given up. That's the standard default setting of the materialistic conception, right? Because it's either I do the work because I want the result. If I don't want the result, I won't do the work. Right? So the concept that I don't want the result, I do the work, that just does not compute. It's not an option. No one will think about that. Right? So this is what then comes out. Yes?
In Kali Yuga, it's quite difficult to perform acts of charity, sacrifice, and austerity because of our lack of proper qualities and mm-hmm. proper facilities. We hear the story of King Riga, and we think, like, wow, maybe I shouldn't invite people to my home because, things may go wrong at some point, and I'll end up in trouble. So can you shed some light on what is our scope of performing charity, austerity, and hospitality? Because there's so many shortcomings in Kali Yuga, in all these social interactions. Like, some people feel offended because they're not invited, and other people feel like, oh, I wasn't treated properly. So how does it work out?
Means is as we see here is that the generic definition always applies. You know, that's the principle. The difficulty comes is in the fine point of the definitions of that principle. Because that principle is defining here giving up of fruitive work. Right? But that means giving up it's only fruitive because of your desire for the result for yourself. But work itself is not defined as fruitive or not. But that's where the problem comes in. So sacrifice will mean that you're doing something voluntarily for someone else's benefit. That's the generic principle. Austerity means the proper performance of your duties, your willingness to perform your duties whether you want to do them or not. Because that's where it becomes austere. As everything is balanced, so there's always going to be how much nice it is, there's going to be that much it's not nice. You know, so the austerity is not performing your duty when it's giving nice results, it's performing your duty when it's on the negative side. You know, like that, the difficulty. So austerity is defined as simply performing one's prescribed duties. And charity simply means that sharing what you have, you know, with the appropriate time, place, and circumstance, with the appropriate persons. Like that. That's the generic. So that will always apply. So even Kali Yuga, you can apply it. You just have to see how to do. All the rules of the Vedas are to give, basically to ensure that at all times, all places, all circumstances, one is able to perform these three. So they give definition. If you're in this situation, then you do this, 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 this. If you're in that situation, you do these rules. Because in previous ages, then the great sages and Brahmins and that, in applying that rule, that's what they did. So it was efficient. You know, just like, and generally in any particular skill, there's always some unique technique or that's given a name of the person who developed it. Right? So, and then that will become a tradition in that line. So that's all the Vedas is doing, is documenting. Shruti, smriti means where the great sages are through conversation, then it's documented how they applied the principle of the Veda. Like that. So the principle is what you're trying to obtain. They have given an idea according to the situations that they have been in and how they've applied it. So taking the principle, taking the example, we use our intelligence, we apply it to our situation like that. That's time, place, and circumstance. It's not a matter of the detail doesn't apply, therefore I throw out the principle. No, it's not like that. It's like I get in the car, okay, I'm used to a shift, but this is an automatic, so therefore none of the rules apply, so I don't have to sit in the front seat. And, you know, do things. I could sit in the back seat and put my feet up on the front seat and, you know, and say, okay, hey, let's go this way or that way. Right? You know. So it doesn't work like that. No, it's still the principle applies, just there's a slight detail. Right? Gears don't go away. It's just whether you have to work them or the car works them. But gears don't go away. You know, steering mechanism doesn't go away. You know, acceleration and brake doesn't go away. You know, whether you have doors or not, whether there's a top or not, you know, these things, those are details. Those change. So that's what gets bewildered, is that the sages think that certain things are given up because of the nature of the principle. Does that make sense? So it can always be applied. You just see, okay, well, what to do and how would, in this situation, what's the best I can do? Like that. And then it works. Because even you look at it from the downside, Riga did see Krishna. So you could say the result of his hospitality is he directly saw Krishna face to face. You know, one could look at that side. Though he had to go through a bit of difficulty to get there. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, the first opinion refers to Shankya school. The followers of Kapila recommend cessation of all activities because by their very nature, activities include violence to other creatures. Because one living entity maintains himself by taking advantage of another. It's just the way the world is set up. You know, there's not an alternative to that. So that's why prescribed duties are there, because by your interacting with that particular group of living entities in that situation, it doesn't disturb your life, their life, or the universal order. But if you don't follow the duties, then you're going to be stepping over the line and dealing with living entities in ways that you shouldn't, and it'll disturb the balance. The second opinion sums up the doctrine of the Karma Mimamsa school. The followers of Jaimini hold that activities such as sacrifice cannot be given up because they are prescribed by the scriptures. The injunctions of nonviolence mentioned in the Vedas do not apply in the case of performing Vedic sacrifices. Therefore, the sacrifices cannot be criticized. So here we're taking it even back to the root of performing, let's say, the animal Ashwamedha Yajna. So the Karma Mimamsa will say, the Shankya will say, we give that up because of the violence. There's no need. We can get our benefit without doing that. So we give up those activities. Right? And the Karma Mimamsa says, no, it's our prescribed duty. Therefore, we can't give it up. Got stuck there. Yeah, they don't think about it. They just keep it. You get very surprised. So these are the two schools of material thought. All schools go back to these two. Like anything. Everything will be a variation or combination of these. And this way you get so many seeming varieties within the material consciousness. But the one is, benefit comes, I will be happy through performance of material activities. And the other is, you can perform all the material activities you want, you'll never be happy. Neither of them connect to the Lord, and neither of them understand the nature of the actual nature of the soul, the material world, anything like this. They all think it's either perfection or illusion. Right? Not that it's inferior energy. Not that the soul is produced separate from the material energy. Because both schools will say the soul is coming from, consciousness is coming, generated from the material phenomena. Right? The Mayavada, you're conscious because of Maya. Otherwise you'd be Brahman. You wouldn't be, you know, conscious, I'm an individual. Right? And the other is just that it's coming from material energy. They don't see beyond. So these two schools will epitomize all material philosophy. Right, all material religion. So you're doing the activity because you're supposed to, and only through that you'll be happy. And the other is, by doing that you'll not be happy, so you give it up. Right. Having described the opinion of others, in verse 5 to 6, the Lord gives his own opinion. Krishna's judgment on the subject that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance must be performed without attachment and without any expectation of results. So that means the two are combined. But this is not the combination, it's not a compromise. Right? It means it's what is actually valuable of the two, that's what's kept. difficulty with the concept of compromise is that you take something this guy doesn't want and something that guy doesn't want and put them together, so they both don't like the result. Right? But the Vedic concept, it's not compromise. It's a matter of, if you take a particular thought and it's not connected to the Lord makes the completeness. So, because the Lord is lacking, we have to fill in for that gap that the Lord's there. So we'll make up all kinds of stuff to fill it out. But the point that is not made up, that's genuine. That's kept. The part that's made up to fill out the aspect of the Lord's not being involved, that's what's dropped. Right? So then if you have two parties or two schools, they're both doing that. So you keep what is actually intended by the Veda, and you drop what is the has been generated because of the lack of God consciousness. So you're taking is that you don't give up the activity, but you don't expect result. So the one is saying, because you expect result, give up the activity. The other one is saying, no, you can't give up the activity because that's your duty. But it doesn't say you give up the result. Right? Krishna's judgment on the subject that acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance must be performed without attachment and without any expectation of results, because they purify even the great souls, as the Lord stated previously. Here, without any expectation of results means for yourself, not mean that you just do the work and if a result's come or not, it doesn't matter. No, that's... As the Lord stated previously, the yogis, abandoning attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification, 5.11. So that's why he says, even with the senses. Because, okay, body, it's engaged in some activity. Right? Mind, okay. Intelligence, great. But senses, wait a minute. Right? But the problem is body means senses, intelligence means senses, mind means senses. But we generally tend to leave that out. Does that make sense? So, this is they don't understand. No, the senses being engaged for yourself, that's a problem. The senses being engaged for Krishna, that's not a problem. Right? This is then where the conclusion is coming in, that you have to be able to see that its connection to the Lord is its only value. If it's not connected to the Lord, it does not have a separate value. That was 5.11, now 6.1. One who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he's obliged is in the renounced order of life. But it means, in other words, obliged means your duties, but you're doing it without the desire for the result. So it's that combination. Right? This is what's unique. We've never come across this before. Right? The two schools, we understand them very clearly. Right? But the idea of doing work because you're supposed to, and not desiring the result, the result's not for ourselves, that's something we've never done before. Right? So that's the uniqueness. That's why it needs to be explained. And he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. Right? So the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord. That's the actual renounced person. But it's not whimsical, as we said, as was saying before. If it's whimsical, it's the mode of ignorance. No, it's according to duty, according to Shastra, right, with the proper attitude. Then it becomes the mode of goodness. That then nicely is engaged in the Lord's service. Right? But if it's mixed, and then we do it whimsically as we like, that becomes difficult. Krishna's own opinion is that the Shankya and Karma Mimamsa philosophies are only partially correct. Kapila is right to assert that material activities are inherently faulty, but he is wrong in his conclusion that all actions should be rejected. This is wrong because inactivity is impossible for the soul and because the soul has natural desires which can be fulfilled by action only. Right? Means ananda is only gained from action. Right? Means there is a minimal form of ananda. Right, the Brahmananda, which is the inherent position of the soul. But that is not that satisfying. If it was, why do we hear that people come back from the Brahman platform? Because it's boring. You understand? Because that position of void, there's nothing happening. And Ananda means relationship. Because we have to remember, the feminine nature means relationship is active. Right? It's dependent upon the interaction between the masculine and feminine principle. Does that make sense? So, and that's Shankya. So then for the Shankyites to then say that therefore there should be no action means they don't actually understand their own philosophy. Right? Because that's the basis of their philosophy, is the masculine and feminine principle. So they don't actually understand, because they don't understand it from the transcendental position. They only see it from the material. Jaimini is also correct, stressing that activity should not be given up. However, the motive for acting should not be prolonged sense gratification, but purification of the soul. Right? Because Jaimini, you perform the activities, but you're performing them so that you will enjoy. Right? His idea is you always do good work, you'll always enjoy. Right? Because your situation is from your previous activities. If all your previous activities are good, your present situation in the future will always be good. So always do good work, you'll always be happy. Right? Which, you know, sounds great, except for he's left out, you know, birth, death, old age, and disease. You know, stuff like that. You know, so it has its weakness, it says. Thus Krishna once again establishes that the real standard of renunciation is not inactivity, but work combined with knowledge. I missed the part? Oh, Baladev. Ah, okay. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan comments that sacrifice, charity, and penance purify the soul through the knowledge arising within them like a lotus blossoming from a root. In order to be purified by these activities, one should perform them without thinking that he is the doer and without attachments for the result, right? Because the doer is the position of sambandha and the desire for results is the position of prayojana. Right? So if that's correct, your abhideya, your activity, is correct, is purified. But if one of those two is off, then there's always going to be a problem. Right? If you think I'm the doer, but the result's for Krishna, then there's going to be a problem. Right? But it's for Krishna, so it will be elevated. Or one thinks,
you're the doer.
I'm the doer. So if I think I'm not the doer, but the result's not for Krishna, then that will get you, you know, the liberated platform, but, you know, one will come back again, so it's not actually the platform of liberation. One should carry on his prescribed duties thinking that they are form of worship of the Lord because they are his instructions. Right? So you're worshiping the Lord through his instructions. So here again, vani is more important than vakula. So the rules and regulations are because they're the Lord's instructions. And so we follow according to the parampara, we take those, we follow those. Right? So that's the... So, yes?
Does those activities, these three elements, they purify and arise knowledge because they contain the element of service, like the eternal...
Because they contain service. Contain service. Yes, service is there. Service is there, but that's service means you call it service because of the concept of result, right? You can still be the doer and render service. Right? So here, the knowledge means you actually understand the nature of the field and the knower of the field. Right? So you understand the soul, super soul, and the material energy. That's the knowledge. So that's inherent. So all the Vedic knowledge is based on this principle. All Vedic knowledge defines this. So, if one sees with that, to perform an activity, you have to have some knowledge. Right? You can't do something if you don't know what it is. So, as you have knowledge, but just having the knowledge doesn't mean you actually fully understand it. There'll be a basic concept, but it's only through application that then you see the knowledge working. So if the knowledge is not working, you have to further contemplate or further develop that knowledge so that you can apply it. As you're applying it, you're seeing how it works, so then you get understanding of it and improves. So it improves the quality of your work. That improves more than that comes to realization. You understand? So that what you will understand, that will be according to the quality of service or not. But one can have great material understanding, and there's not the element of necessarily of service. You know what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying? Because you're taking service meaning devotional service. Right? But if you're taking it by generic activity performed in the mood of service, that's the only way anybody is successful anywhere. Right? You know what I'm saying? The very wealthy man, he is engaged in, let's say, a particular business transaction. But during that time, he's not thinking, this is mine and I'm the doer. He's thinking, I am engaged in this process of economic action. And he sees himself as just a part of that. And he's simply an instrument. Right? Before he starts, he thinks he's the doer. And when it ends, it's his result. So that's why it's fault. That's why it'll be fruited. But actually, he's successful because of the correct mentality while the work is going on. Right? So if you have that mentality, you will be successful. You don't have a mentality, you'll never be successful. Right? Does that make sense? So service is there because it's material energy and the Lord. It's not you are manipulating. The Lord is controlling the energy. You can be an instrument in that process. Or the spiritual energy, it's the Lord and the spiritual energy. You can be an instrument in that process. So there's no question of ever being in a situation where we're not servant. Right? Does that make sense? So the more that's understood, then the better it will work.
Simply by following this proper process, it's not necessarily the person will come to that understanding.
By following the process, you won't come to that understanding. No, because Krishna before says only through devotional service can you actually understand. Because, see, as we're dealing here, that's what's been pointed out in the second chapter, is the eternal platform. Arjuna has been looking at the temporary in the first chapter. That's his problem. But so the eternal platform has been pointed out, so therefore we wouldn't have a conclusion that's going to be temporary again. So actual understanding means permanent. So that will only come through devotional service. These others, one can get liberation by Naishkarmya. But the problem is it'll be temporary. You know? So you have to look at it, even if you look at it by perception, right? It means you spend lifetimes elevating yourself to the platform of liberation, going through so much difficulty, right? You obtain to that position of Brahman. Then the thing is now time for you acts on the Brahman platform. So, eternity is standard. Anything less than that is a short time. Problem is the jiva not doing anything gets bored very quickly on the Brahman time. Right? But his following the process to elevate himself to that platform wasn't on Brahman time. That was a slogging through a lifetime of austerity. And probably many lifetimes, or hundreds, or thousands of them. So if you actually compare it, it's not comparable. It means looking here, you're Brahman, that's eternal, like this and that. It looks great, just like going to the heavenly planets. It looks like a long time. But when you're in the heavenly planets, it's 100 years to you. You understand? So the perception is no different. So it's not actually, you can't call that a solution. You know what I'm saying? So only through devotional service can it actually be done, because service in the material platform will still give temporary results. So, but as we were saying in the beginning, the principle of it working doesn't change. So whether one's a devotee serving the Lord, or one's a person serving the community, or he's just serving his senses, in any case he has to serve to get the result. Okay. Yes.
Most processes of yoga and meditation are mainly targeting Brahman realization means those who properly follow it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how to add the aspect of Krishna and devotional service, because there's that conditioning of the mode of goodness of knowledge and happiness,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which means I'm okay, I'm content.
Yes.
But it doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. That's why there will be...
It will go somewhere, but it'll go down. Because anything that goes up has to come down. So the only way it can go up and it stays up is transcendental. So they'll be content, but they'll get bored with their contentment. And so they will try to do something to create some variety, some spice. Because there's, especially there's only so much, pretzelness that the human body can accomplish. And once you've accomplished that, then it gets pretty boring. Though generally it takes a whole lifetime, so you kind of get too old. So, but you know what I'm saying?
So the Kumaras, we have all these examples of Brahmavadis who became devotees later on because of hearing.
Well, there's only two.
Yeah,
the four Kumaras and Sukadev, that's
yeah.
it.
Hearing Bhagavatam and smelling tulsi leaves offered to the
yeah.
Lord. So, you could recite more Bhagavatam and distribute more Mahatulsi.
The point is that if they're actually transcendentally situated, they don't have it. They know who they are, and they know that they're on the Brahman platform. So, the engagement of the material senses has no value to them. So when they contact something where the engagement of the senses is of value, they know it has to be transcendental. And so they can immediately see its source as the Lord. Therefore, they come to that. Yes.
Because they realize they're not afraid of moving on, of continuing further in their...
It's because it's not... Brahman is their identity, not the process they got there. The difficulty is someone's a hatha yogi, that's his identity. Someone's a kriya yogi or all these different things, that's his identity.
It's a designation.
Therefore, they're always afraid of losing that because that's their position.
Give some security in this world.
Because otherwise, chanting, you give up all these other things. But that's their identity, the nicely arranged room and the curtains and the little gong that they go boing when they start the program and nobody talks and afterwards and then they afterwards have a very nice organic snack and everyone wears their good quality leotards and stuff like that and they bought it Saks Fifth Avenue you could get it at Bloomie's but all these different things like that so that makes up their identity. And so to just chant and that's all you need, then you lose all that. So they won't be able to necessarily see that in connection with the modes because this is very easy. But when they leave that yoga studio, then they don't worry about yoga. They're just in the modes of passion and ignorance and that's what they're doing. But here we're saying how you can take that what's there with you anywhere. So that means your activity. Yoga is that it's not that dynamic, or let's say not dynamic, very intense material activities of, of the business or the family or this and that. So you're getting away from that, and that gives the identity, that gives the experience. What we're saying is no, while you're at your job, right in the middle of a big deal or when you're dealing with your family, you could also be getting liberated if you have the proper knowledge. So this is something very... big, because then it's 24 hours instead of 20 minutes or 1 hour, three nights a week. That's a lot different. So it's easy to learn those things. You learn a few asanas, you learn to be quiet, you learn to talk nicely. You get a taste for, like organic, half-cooked oatmeal cookies. These kind of things, you develop that, and so it's something you can learn very easily. But this other thing means you actually, and it doesn't change your identity, that I'm doing this to make myself happy. I'm doing business to make myself happy. I'm dealing with the family to make myself happy. I'm doing yoga to make myself happy. But here, then you're it's a matter of knowledge rather than just the, I want to be happy. So that knowledge and then being applied there, that's what's really going to make you happy, but you have to have a bit more long-term, appreciation. The faith has to go. It's greater faith. That's the main thing. So the yoga systems, there's faith there, But it won't be as much as in the devotional service, because then it's complete, because it's connected to the Lord. And then he's connected to everything, so then it works. Is that?
So in other words, you're saying the devotee is striving for sannyas in whatever ashram he is, because he or she wants to connect all their activities with the Lord.
Yes.
And doesn't see any situation as independent of the Lord.
Yes. That's the point. So the Vedic system is, that's actually what you're supposed to do. Doesn't matter what varna ashram, the mentality is sannyas. And that sannyas should be connected to the Lord. Right? Impersonal is not enough. So because that's still a motive. Right? So heavenly planets, Brahman, it's still a motive. But just to please Krishna, devotional, that's the real thing. Now, just to ensure that at least, because that's the purpose, to at least everybody should at some point in their life do that to some degree, even though it's not perfect. Therefore, then you have the renounced orders at the end of life, you have vanaprastha sannyas to do that. So everybody should do that, because at least, if they haven't done it before that, at least they do it then. You know? And even if they're doing it for fruitive motives, they're vanaprastha, very austere, because they want to go to the heavenly planets, but at least the concept of renunciation and the sannyas is accepted by them. So it's favorable for the soul. So at some point, if they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, then they'll actually understand the real nature of sannyas. But is that, like you said, is that anyone in any situation can be a sannyasi? That's the point. Even we're taking it beyond in that story of Prachina Bharhishat, who was the king? Paranjana, yes. So Paranjana, after he dies and he becomes the queen, Queen Vidarbhi, right? Yeah, and the Maharaj Malayadvaj. So when they take Vanaprastha at the end of the life and he dies, like that, then in that purport, there Prabhupada's talking about the spiritual master, disciple, husband, wife, and they're also talking about the soul and Krishna as Paramahamsas. So he's talking about how a grihastha couple can be paramhamsas because of this actual, this proper knowledge and perception. But it doesn't change the activity. The impersonal thought is that to change the conscious, you have to change the activity. And means, and it's direct. Well, we understand that it will be helpful because of our own concept of the particular situation. But ultimately, that's not the point. Consciousness is independent from material engagement, like that. So it doesn't actually have a connection. So you can change the consciousness in whatever situation you are in, and situate yourself in relationship to the Lord. Thus, Krishna once again establishes that the real standard of renunciation is not inactivity, but work combined with knowledge. Action by itself is not contaminating. The reactions from work come not from the work itself, but from the polluted consciousness of the worker. Right? Work is just work. It's how your consciousness is, whether it comes to you or goes to someone else. Right? That's the... Therefore, one should not give up his work, but should instead use it to elevate his consciousness. Srila Prabhupada explains, everything that leads to Krishna consciousness must be encouraged. That is the highest criterion of religion. Devotee of the Lord should accept any kind of work, sacrifice, or charity, which will help him in the discharge of devotional service to the Lord. So religion means the inherent nature. So you have an inherent nature of a human or an animal. You have the inherent nature of a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. You have the inherent nature of, someone within that particular thing, that particular age, or that particular, having that kind of wealth or that kind of power. These are all have their natures. But the ultimate criterion of religion is that the nature of the soul connected with God, and therefore connecting the situation that the soul's in to God. That being done, that's the highest understanding of religion. In verse 4, the Lord mentioned that the renunciation, tyag, is of three types. In verses 7 to 12, he describes these three types in detail. Renouncing prescribed duties because of illusion is renunciation in ignorance. Giving up prescribed duties out of fear as troublesome is renunciation in passion. Right? So if you don't actually understand, you think, I'm done with this, I'm through with this, that will be illusion. Or if you're giving it up because it's trouble, that's in the mode of passion. It's a matter of, this is the time to give it up, this is my duty. Right? And I am able to perform that duty. In other words, you take up a duty you can do, at least, give it a good try. Yes?
It would seem that passion, in the mode of passion, is actually somehow worse than ignorance, because you're acting out of pure selfishness.
You can, but the point is as, in one sense you can say yes, but in another sense no, because only through action can you get a result. And so if you want a good result, you can only do it through action. So the man in the mode of passion is as active. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, let's say somebody who's very materialistic and very dedicated to that endeavor, and they're successful, one will say, they're so passionate, so attached, they can never be a devotee. The simple guy who, doesn't worry about anything and doesn't really care and doesn't get anything done, but he's not that attached and, like this. We're going to say, it'll be easier for him. Maybe the initial concept of the detachment and like that will be easier for the person who's not very active. But in the long run, with time, he also won't care about doing activity until he's purified. But the other person, he knows only through action do you get result. But now if you show to him what the actual result you want is to please Krishna, and to do that is devotional service, he'll be very active. But you'll have to use a great amount of, explanation associated to convince him. But once he's convinced, he'll be, in one sense, better situated. You know what I'm saying? So that's the... that would also give a key to the technique of preaching. Is that this idea is that we'll just deal in very... How you say? The presentation will be very gentle, but we'll also reduce the philosophy because we don't want anything scary, and because they, are favorable or appreciative, then that's the dynamic result. But the point is they'll continue doing what they're doing, that they'll just add a little bit of the Krishna consciousness, which in the long run, yes, it will be good. But because of not fully understanding, they will continue on in their own situation and may be distracted. Because what's their reason for taking up Krishna consciousness? Right? They're taking up, all these new age stuff because it gives some answers to their difficulties, artha, artharthi, jigyasu. Right? But it's not that they want to know the Lord. So if one doesn't bring one through to that, then it will be temporary. Well, the other, it will take more work to convince them. You have to know the philosophy. You have to be able to present Vedanta as it is. And they may argue, they may say this and that, but once they're convinced, then they'll do the rest. So it's more trouble. So it's seemingly, this soft preaching is less, but it's actually in the mode of passion. It's trouble, so it's given up. If I just talk nicely and that, then it makes it very easy, and people will like me. It's not a matter of liking me, it's a matter of convincing them. You convince them, then they'll like you. But they want you. I should be liked first. You know what I'm saying? So it means, of course, there's a balance here. This is an extreme example, but the point is. Renunciation and ignorance means giving up all types of prescribed duties, kamya, nitya, and naimitika. Kamya means for your own purpose. Nitya means things that you're supposed to do daily, like take your bath, brush your teeth, like that. And naimitika means occasional activities, so something is done on a certain occasion, like that. It's prescribed. According to Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, although rejecting the kamyaka karma is indeed required, one should never reject nitya and naimitika duties. Right? You can give up doing an ashramedhi yajna, but you don't give up your other duties. So Baladev says, these should not be given up because they produce liberation through the knowledge of Atma, which is inherent in them, and because they also enable one to continue to support the material body. Right? Means this, the Vedic knowledge is inherent in the knowledge of the soul relationship with God. It's just Bhagavatam is very direct and obvious. Mahabharat, it's kind of there. And other literatures, it may not be obvious at all, but it is there. They do directly say that. Right? You know, it's like Manu will say, everything's coming from the Lord. And so he creates the world, that comes from him. And then within creation of the world, he defines what's good and bad. Right? And so good and bad, that's your basic principle of then Varnashram. Right? And so to maintain the world, so it will work nicely, Varnashram is made. And to maintain Varnashram, then, you know, the Brahmins, they're the ones that teach it, and the Kshatriyas are the one that, you know, manages it. But it's come from the Lord. So that's obviously given there. Does that make sense? So, but out of thousands of verses, one may not notice that. Does that make sense? So Ayurveda is also saying the same thing. All the literatures are saying the same thing, but one may miss it. That's what Bhagavatam is special, is that it directly just points out the relationship with the Lord. So all branches of knowledge in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? So this knowledge is inherent. And then they also maintain the body, because if you don't have a body, how do you render service, right? So when you have a spiritual body, then you don't have to worry about it. But as long as one is in the material body, then one spiritualizes it through that connection. Okay. If a person gives up these duties completely out of a lack of knowledge, mohat, thinking they will cause bondage, it is in the tamasic mode, since moha is a characteristic of the mode of ignorance. He thinks it will cause bondage. So the Kapilites, thinking that these performance of action will bind you, and by giving up these things, that's the only way you'll be liberated. Actually, there's an illusory aspect. And it's interesting to note that generally those who are interested in liberation, they tend towards the worship of Lord Shiva. You know, it's just the natural, because that's the mode they're working under. Though with knowledge. But the renouncer in ignorance gives up the duties because of lack of knowledge. The renouncer in passion, though knowledgeable, still gives up his duties because of the bodily inconveniences accompanying them. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan describes such persons as follows. Even after knowing that performing prescribed action with no desire is a cause of liberation, if the desire of liberation gives up those actions out of fear of bodily pain, such as having difficulties to obtain the materials for sacrifice, or disliking the discomfort of the morning bath, his renunciation is in the mode of passion, since such experience of discomfort is the quality of the mode of passion. Having given up the actions, that person will not attain steadiness in jnana, which is the result of performing action. Right? So not action results in knowledge. So if you give up action, you also will give up the understanding. Because the process given in the Upanishads is you've heard shravana, then you apply it, manana. So if you're not applying it, how you'll contemplate? Right. That's what we mean by armchair speculators. An armchair speculator is he's very intelligent, he has lots of knowledge, and he contemplates the knowledge, but he does nothing. So he'll actually never have really a deep understanding, and he'll definitely never have realization. Right? But he'll be very thoughtful and very, you know, intellectual. Like this. These qualities will come. Okay. So, in other words, giving up something, does that make sense? It's just like, renouncing something because, let's say someone's managing something. It's a big trouble. So it's too much trouble. He doesn't want to do this, so he gives it up. That's renunciation, the mode of passion. Right? And then his nature is a manage. And so management is trouble, so that's his inspiration that way to give it up, but he thinks that he'll be happy by giving that up. That's illusion. So that's ignorance. Does that make sense? But now, let us say is the situation is such that there's opportunity to do other activities. Someone else can do the management and all that. And so it's just a natural step to move forward into something else, so one is not doing that kind of management. then that's just following the natural course of one's duties. Right? So there's a difference there. So one's not doing it not because it's a trouble, one's not doing it because something else is more favorable for advancement. Right? And it has to be seen that it actually works. It's not just an idea. Right? It can't be whimsical. It has to be, you know, an authorized natural progression. Yes?
What are the sociological reasons why our movement is mainly attracting people from the, I'd say, Kalau Shudra Sambhava, worker class, Shudra background, and there's some Brahmin background, but we find very, very few individuals who are actually inclined or good at management and at business? Is there some reason, or what's your understanding of this scenario?
Basic would be is when we talk about, okay, because we see is that the knowledge, you know, the desire for knowledge will attract, because we have that. That will attract anyone who's, you know, has an intellectual value in their life. Then, and the common person, just because material life is so difficult, and so here's something that gives some answers what you can do. And so the one is more self, self-inspired to study and know. And the other one needs just a very minimal amount of understanding. The basic understanding works for them, because basically they're working on sentiment. So if that sentiment is being able to be inspired by some fundamental principles of Krishna consciousness, then they're on the right track. It'll keep them busy. The difficulty is in between, because of the mode of passion, that there's great activity and there's great desire for results. And they are successful because they've contemplated, they've worked these things out. They know how things function. So unless you can present to them Krishna consciousness on a level that's as convinced as they are in materialism, and as technical or sophisticated as they are, how will they be convinced? So previously you'd see we would attract such persons, you know, some, because of the commitment to that knowledge. And we kept it simple and just kept on these points and could basically take the simple points and apply them anywhere in the life because of the faith. Nowadays, I would say that necessarily that faith, that those fundamentals can be applied anywhere in any situation, may not be as strong as it should be. So if that's cultivated, that we understand Vedanta is the ultimate philosophy, and it explains the ultimate, you know, application on one's life, the ultimate culture, then, and one is convinced of that, then one could easily convince these persons. But it's not an area that we've worked in. And I would say is that it's a dangerous area, because a muda is someone who is in ignorance, doesn't know the Lord, and is satisfied with just the day-to-day grind of material life. And Mayaya Pratigyana is someone who, just due to their pride and their knowledge, they can't understand God. They can't approach. So, you know, they stay in their position. The Asura, just power. He just wants power. So it's a matter of niti, basically. You're just getting your work done. And, you know, so they're not so interested. You know, what's the importance? So all these ones are pretty straightforward. The Naradhama, now this is a little bit touchy here. You can only become a Naradhama in that you understand there is such a thing as devotional service, and that it's position, and you reject it. That makes you a Naradhama. Right? So just because you're, you know, very low-class person or very materially absorbed, that doesn't make you a Naradhama. Naradama means you have the opportunity for devotional service, you don't take it. So the difficulty will come is that group that you talked about in the middle, the professionals, they're smart enough to understand Krishna consciousness, but if you don't apply it properly, then if they reject it, you've turned them into a Naradama. And that's definitely not, you could say, some valuable service. So I would say at this point in time, Krishna's protecting them. So now they're just, you know, maturely absorbed professionals, but that's better than being a Naradama. You know, does that make sense? So someone could appreciate that you give the straight philosophy to them in language and context they can understand. There's no need of compromise, because compromise, all they see is compromise in the world. They're professionals because they know how to deal with compromise and how to make the best out of it. So they're sick of that. They want to see the real thing. So if we're willing to give them that, they'll take it. But if it's just another compromise, how good are we at that? You know, so I mean, we get there and all this and that, and we're worried that, oh, kirtan is, maybe they'll think it's weird and this and that, maybe we should do this and maybe we should do that. We come up with all kinds of different mantras we'll chant and different ways, and maybe we should put this in and that in, and, you know, the lack of confidence. But then you get some guys from Vrindavan, from all these weirdo ashrams, they'll come in, they'll just chant Hare Krishna, and they have full conviction, and they got, you know, they have tour programs booked, you know, for the next year. You know, so it's like, you know, they want somebody who's convinced. They're convinced that material life is there, and they've endeavored, and they haven't gotten anything. They want an answer. So they don't want some, you know, wishy-washy kind of, well, maybe. Political correctness is their life. They use it every day to make money. They want substance. They know that's not real. So they want substance. So if we're willing to give it to them, they'll take it. When one performs one's prescribed duties with regulation, giving up all material association and attachment to the results, his renunciation is in goodness. So he's performing his duties, he's giving up material association, so he's in good association with devotees. And, or he sees whatever association he's in connection to Krishna, like that, and the results are for Krishna, then that's in the mode of goodness. Verse 9. Here the Lord repeats his opinion about sacrifice, charity, and penance, expressed in verse 6. Quote, all these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty. Because attachment, okay, we give up that, but we expect the result. But the point is results are Krishna. Krishna gives the results. Paramatma, that's what he deals with. You want to do something, so then he authorizes, according to your previous activities, whether you can get that result. If you can, then you're authorized to do the activity that gives you the result. Right? So you still have to give up the attachment to getting a result. Right? Because then I have to get the result, then means I did the work, I got the result, means I am the doer. Right? So it's the other side. So attachment to means the attachment, and the expectation of results means I am the doer, you know, and I am the enjoyer. I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? Because in result you have the desire for it and you have the attainment of it. Right? They both are there. So you have the experience and you have the physical form. Both will be there. Such detached, dutiful work results in transcendental knowledge. Right? So one will understand the nature of the soul, the nature of the material world. Still, you have to connect this to Krishna. Right? Because you can say that there is material, spiritual, and devotional. Right? So devotional is spiritual because it's not material. But you can't have the situation of spiritual that's not specifically devotional. It should be. It's coming from following the devotional process, but just it's not connected to the Lord. The next verse describes the qualities of the intelligent renouncer. Neutral to inauspicious and auspicious works, the intelligent renouncer in goodness has no doubt about his work. Srila Prabhupada describes him as follows. A person in Krishna consciousness or in the mode of goodness does not hate anyone nor anything which troubles his body. He does work in the proper place and at the proper time without fearing the troublesome effects of his duty. Such a person situated in transcendence should be understood to be most intelligent and beyond all doubts in his activities.
That sort of precludes that you know what your duty is, you know what your work is.
You know what your duty is, but that's right, that's what we dealt with right in the beginning. Gita said to figure that out. Because that's easy to figure out. The problem is our doubts, we don't want to figure it out. Because we have some ideas of what we should be or could be or this or that. Because the point is, as far as Krishna is concerned, it doesn't matter. If it's connected to Krishna, it's perfect. You know? Like that. That's the point. We create the thing as, oh, this is better, that's better. These elements are only better simply because of the essential elements. Brahman is considered better because of the situation and knowledge. Right? And of knowledge, then the understanding of the soul is superior. And of that, understanding the soul's relationship with God. Right? And superior to that is acting within that in devotion. So if anybody has that knowledge, they're situated on that platform of Brahman. So it doesn't matter what their occupation is or what their situation is socially. You know, does that make sense? So these things are done. The sannyas is considered better because of the element of work that's performed without a desire for the result, which everybody should be doing. So because that is their occupation, they're put in a superior position. Does that make sense? Renunciation is considered better than the attachment simply because renunciation is closer to the spiritual world than material attachment. But it's only partially close. Right? Means attachment to Krishna. That's what you're trying to get to. So if you can just go from attachment to material to attachment to spiritual, why bother with the in-between? You know what I'm saying? Because automatically you'll go from material fruit of work to sannyas. Right? The middle is renunciation. I'm attached to the material, but I know the spiritual, so I work in one and then give it to the other. But sannyas means I don't work in this, I only work in that. But it's more natural to the soul because it can still have the element of wanting to get that result for someone's benefit. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So the process of just elevating one transcendently by engaging devotional service rather than getting involved in all the indirect things would be the best.
It would be the best, but the problem is we tend to, you know, how you say, want to expand our options, you know, the horizons. So that goes beyond just preaching all day. You know, chanting, preaching, taking prasad, you know, I mean, that's the best situation. Studying, teaching, like that. That's the ideal. But if one can't do that, then one engages and, you know, has all the elements of the deity worship and that regulates your life. You know, so minimalist goes outside of that. And if that doesn't, then you bring in all the different aspects of the social and economic and, you know, family environment. That's what comes in. That's the next. So the point is all that can be connected to Krishna because one is doing it because of it's his duties and he's doing that without a desire for his results for himself. So one can be sannyas, you know, in family life because it's a mentality. That's the whole point. It's the consciousness that defines the thing. You know, it's not the activity. You know what I'm saying? We always take it that it's the situation. But it's not, right? Being focused on the situation, in other words, if the form is, manipulation of the form is what's more important to you, then the forms itself, the situations in which there's opportunity for that operation of the field, that's what's going to be important to you. But if it's the relationship, then the natural interaction between the two parties, that's actually the element. That's the spontaneous. Right? Does that make sense? So, in the material world, the form is there because there is, where is the spontaneity? It means you have material spontaneity, but it still ultimately comes back to the situation. Right? But the spiritual world, then, you can have that based on the rules and regulations of Vaikuntha, so it's a very nice situation, and they'll notice that more, but it's connected with the Lord. Right? He's so great, then he has Vaikuntha is so wonderful. But in Vrindavan, the situation is just the most perfect in which you can render that service to Krishna. But the situation itself is not what's important to the devotees. Right? In fact, when they look at it, they look at it in connection to its service to Krishna. You know, the forest of Vrindavan, how it's, you know, pious and it's doing all this nice service, and they'll see the devotee's relationship with the Lord. So they're not actually seeing the opulence in this and that. There's greater opulence in Vrindavan. You don't hear of, I mean, that I know of, you don't hear of trees that are made out of crystal, you know, with ruby fruits and emerald leaves. I don't remember. It may be there, but I don't remember hearing that Vaikuntha has that. But Vrindavan has that. But that's just the way it is. Nobody cares. You know, it's Krishna that's important. Does that make sense? So that spontaneity, that's... So the situation, but we tend to view the situation. So this situation, that's good, therefore we can do devotional service. Situation's not there, you can't do devotional service. Therefore, if someone's in a situation of maya, then you can't do devotional service there. Therefore, you have to give all that up to be engaged in devotional service. No, you have to give up the consciousness. You understand? So that's why it says one's not has a problem with auspicious or inauspicious work. Whatever the situation is, that's where you start from. Right? You know what I'm saying? So let's say someone is there, they're carving Jagannath deities, right? And you come in to check. And when you come in, then you notice a pack of cigarettes sitting on Jagannath's head. What are you going to do? Yell, scream, this, that, bring it up, there'll be meetings, this guy, you know, be thrown out. You know, he's, you know, he not only, you know, he's smoking, but he's using Jagannath as, you know, his, you know, a cigarette holder, you know, and stuff like this and that. And so, you know, this guy's a nonsense, he shouldn't be allowed to do any service and this and that, throw him out. Sounds standard, right? That's pretty much what everyone would go for, right? What did Prabhupada do? He came in and go, you know, you shouldn't smoke. And so, you know, since you're attached to this, you can smoke 2 cigarettes a day. One after breakfast, one after lunch, right? Because that's a standard time to smoke. You can't smoke outside, it can't be whimsical. You can only smoke at those 2 times. And so, you know, basically he understood and then he stopped smoking. And continued carving the deity and doing everything else. You know what I'm saying? So the point is to be engaged and remove what's the obstacle to engagement. Not that that obstacle takes precedent over the service and so therefore the service is removed. You understand? So that's an attachment to auspicious and inauspicious work. You understand? It's that we'll say, oh, he shouldn't do because he's engaged in auspicious, therefore. Does that make sense? So the great sages, they're not attached to either, whatever your position. Right? Narad Muni, when he's talking to Magrari, was it Magrari? No, Dasaratnakar. Then, yeah, also Magrari. But in both of them, then he's not going, oh, this is a bonal, you're a hunter and this and that, or a dacoit. He's just going, you know, you're doing all this, but you understand the reaction you're going to get? So the problem is not the work itself, the problem is the reaction the work will get. So it's not favorable towards self-realization. Does that make sense? So, therefore, he's saying, you know, consider this. And because of this, he's able to make them God conscious by starting in their own field. He didn't say, first give up hunting, then we can talk Krishna conscious. No, he said, you know, consider what's going on here. Does that make sense? So that's the element of attachment to auspicious and inauspicious work. Like that. So there's also the element we're attached that inauspicious work can't be connected. You know what I'm saying? If someone else is doing it, right? But for ourselves, we're always looking for that. Oh, so that means then, you know, it's like that's what we've been going through the last, like, 2 weeks. And then before when it came up, you know, in other chapters. So that means then, you know, it's always, you know, oh, so we don't have to, you know, it's always finding the loophole for ourselves. Everybody else, no, you know, very strict. You know, so like that, you know, that combination of that balance between strictness and liberal-mindedness. So, you know, we found that balance that we're very strict with everyone else and we're very liberal with ourselves. You know, so, you know, it works out. Okay, so we'll end here. Continue tomorrow. No, not tomorrow. Monday. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi.